Welcome to the RV Entrepreneur Podcast, the weekly show for nomads, work campers, RVers, and entrepreneurs looking to earn a living or build a business while enjoying the RV lifestyle. This week's host is Joshua Sheehan. Let's settle in and enjoy the RV Entrepreneur Podcast brought to you by RV Life. This episode is sponsored by Wholesale Warranties.
Protecting your RV investment means being ready for anything. An extended RV warranty from Wholesale Warranties is the best way to make sure that if an RV failure happens, you can afford to get back to enjoying the RV life as soon as possible. RV warranties are available for motorhomes, fifth wheels, and travel trailers, new and used, across the U.S. Visit WholesaleWarranties.com for a free personalized RV warranty quote today and hit the road with peace of mind tomorrow.
Hey there, RV entrepreneurs. I'm Joshua. Welcome to this week's episode. This is a really cool conversation with TJ from Campsite 360. Kind of cool how we ran into each other. We were at a campground. This guy says, "I've walked past you a few times and you look really familiar." And I was like, well, we started going down through the different ways that he could have seen me online. He's like, "RV entrepreneur, that's where I know you from." I was like, "Cool, man. You got to like tell me more about yourself." We got to talking and we figured out that we had connected on LinkedIn earlier in the year, but that the conversation needed to be had. And so I've got TJ on today to talk about his business, Campsite 360. It's a really cool business idea. There are a few other people out there doing it, but the way that they're going about it and encouraging people to get involved is really kind of unique. And I enjoyed sitting down. We did an in-person interview, which is something we don't normally do, but we're at the campsite sitting at the picnic table. So if you hear some things in the background that couldn't be edited out or the AI could not filter out with some wind noise, please bear with me. But it's a really cool conversation. I spent some time with TJ and got to talk through this business model, and big things are happening in this space. And it's really cool to see what's going to be happening for the end user of figuring out what you're getting into when you're booking a campsite and being able to take 360-degree tours and kind of view the park and see what's there before you choose your site or you choose the amenities that you want to spend your money on. And it's also offering a lot of opportunities for people to get into things business-wise. So with that, let's jump into the interview with TJ from Campsite 360. All right, TJ, welcome to the RV Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm excited to be in person with you. As we said before we started, this is my second in-person podcast. So you might hear some RVs going around. People are coming in. Oh, I'm just realizing now it's Friday. So you might actually hear quite a few people coming
it's Friday
in
at check-in.
Yeah, exactly. But tell me a little about yourself. Who are you and what are you doing?
Yep. So my name's TJ Ammond, and we run Campsite 360, which does virtual tours for campgrounds, private campgrounds across the country. So,
cool. And so tell me about your story. Where did you get into RVing? And then you're full-time now. How did that transfer into full-time living? Or did you guys just jump in from the get-go?
So I grew up camping. We had a seasonal campsite from the time I was a kid up until about high school. And we'd always traveled around on trips with grandparents and stuff like that, going various places. So once I was in high school, got into college, it was something I always wanted to get back into. So it was something always on our mind, right? And then 2019, we decided that we're going to go to the RV show and we're going to go buy an RV. So we did that in January, put a deposit on an RV, and then 2-3 months later, COVID hits. And we're sitting there trying to figure out, what are we going to do? Is this the right path to take? Because we hadn't had it delivered yet.
Right.
My wife and I looked at each other and said, what else are we going to do? Right. Like, so if we're just going to sit in the house, or we can take the RV and still go camping. And that's what we ended up doing. So that summer we went pretty much every weekend we could, trying to get out of the house, take the kids, and just get a break from the quarantine and everything else that was happening. And we fell in love. And that first year we camped well into October in Ohio, which got relatively cold, but it was something we didn't want to give up at that point. Right. So we enjoyed it that much.
Cool. So yeah, we bought our rig in March of 2020 as well. So it sounds like we both got in before pricing went absolutely haywire.
We did.
Is that still the rig that you guys are currently using?
No, it's not. We ended up, once we last year sold our, 2 years ago now, sold our house and everything else, we lived in that for a while, but knew that travel, and I have 3 young girls and 2 dogs, that the travel trailer we had was not going to be big enough to handle us all full time.
Right.
So we ended up, after we sold our house and everything, we ended up buying our current rig that December of, what was that, I guess 2021.
Okay. And so what had you guys done for business before hitting the road?
So I did, I sold security cameras, access control, so physical security products in Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
And then right before, like end of 2019, I quit that and started consulting. And I started helping a few other people building their security businesses and kind of getting things into place. So that's what I did. My wife was a teacher. So she taught elementary age kids for 12 years before we got on the road.
Mm-hmm. So in looking at hurdles of getting on the road and taking a business on the road, you didn't necessarily either, you have huge things that you had to leave. Like it was pretty, was it a seamless transition to be able to say, hey, this is an option and be able to switch over from that current model or that model to the current model?
So kind of a weird story with that. So when we started the business, it was actually in 2020. So we had just bought the RV and we were sitting at a campground and we'd kind of pulled up and realized like there were sites we would have paid more for.
Okay.
But there was no way for us to know that it was that much of a better site, right? When we were looking at the map and the booking software, it was just a rectangle on a page.
Right.
And it's like, what differentiates that site from the site we're going to pay? I'll save $40 by not booking that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we got there, it was much more yard. It was in a better spot. So there were all those things that we started talking and it's like, there's got to be a better way to do this. And with my background, I knew there were 360 cameras that absolutely catch everything that's there from a security standpoint. So I dove in and started looking at 360 cameras. And our first intent was, we'll just drive through parks, put it on YouTube. It'll help somebody. And
sure.
Then we can have content if we remember, hey, we want to come back here, which sites were good. We don't have to have the paper maps where we were circling sites.
Yeah.
So that's where it started. And I'd done sales. And so my sales kicked in. And I was like, I wonder if parks would buy this, right? So it was about September of 2020. I just started calling people saying, hey, this is what we're doing. Trying to find a park in Ohio that would let us go do it. And once we got a park, the goal really wasn't to be on the road. It was to offset camping costs, to be able to allow us to get different things, maybe upgrade a rig. But really the thought was we'll be in Ohio.
Okay.
The first customer we picked up was in Northern Arkansas. So that kind of threw a wrench into that.
How did you come to that? Like if you were searching for people in Ohio, how did they get hooked up to you? Do you know?
So it was through some email that we had sent out to, I don't know how we got them on a list and where it came from. And honestly, the campground owner was like, how'd you find me? Because he had just opened up his park or is still in construction.
Uh-huh.
And so he had run a timeshare and then he was adding on the RV park to it.
Okay.
So his thing was, well, we're not done with the RV park, but I need you to film the cabins before we get into our busy season. So I drove 12 and a half hours from Ohio to Northern Arkansas in middle of March to go film these cabins and kind of figure things out from there. So we had done a pilot in Ohio, but it was, we didn't really do a whole lot of interior stuff at that point. So I was really learning on the go. And then from there, that following summer, we ended up picking up, I think, customers in five different states. And most of that was just from like very, you know, easy marketing. Like we didn't push a whole lot. We weren't really trying. And we ended up getting interest from all over. And kind of that point was where we said, this might be a little bit bigger and more people might be more interested in this than we first thought.
Mm-hmm.
So I closed down my consulting business in September of 21. And kind of jumped in full time. And we started realizing there's state shows that we can go to where campground owners come in and they have a vendor trade show. So we ended up doing those. And then we did a national show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of really what kicked off, you know, the thought of, well, we can do this full time. And this is a business that would allow us to get onto the road.
Right.
So we didn't really have to give up a lot. My wife quit teaching, but, you know, it kind of started a year and a half before kind of planting the seeds of, this might really be possible.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I could see two different ways of approaching this model of 360 degree tours of campgrounds. One, you have some sort of membership where people come to you and then they can go and see the different parks you've been to. The other one, which you've chosen, is to sell that content to the parks itself. Was there thought between the two of them and why did you choose one over the other? And or maybe retroactively, why would you continue to choose one over the other?
So when we started out, we were using the Dirt, Compendium, like all those review sites to find stuff.
Yeah.
And when I really looked at it, the issue that I saw wasn't so much that, you know, you can find content on RV parks. You might not get site specific, but there's reviews and everything else you can look at. But in all of those, the campground owners really had no say, right? So you have other platforms that were kind of laying out what to expect from the park, what the sites were like, what their personal experience was.
Okay.
But really, you didn't have a whole lot of park owners taking charge and saying, this is what we offer. And if you go to a lot of their sites, they have limited pictures of sites, and it doesn't represent the park, you know, in all of them the way it is there. Either right. It's better than it is, or, you know, they have some really good sites and you don't see all of them. So when we looked at it, we're like, this is an opportunity that we can help park owners really actually show the money that they've put into their parks and what they've done to help draw people in. So that's kind of why we chose that. Plus, when we were looking at it, it's like, would I want another subscription to go to? And then what's that limited to, right? Mm-hmm. You're limited to what I have.
Right.
So what we wanted to do is really help the parks and then help them to push that out and leverage, you know, the content and stuff that we put on their website for themselves.
Right. Yeah, it definitely makes sense. Like, the membership could work if you've got 4,000 parks
exactly.
recorded. But starting from, hey, can I knock on the door and say, yep. can I film your park? It's much easier sell and much more value add too, because that individual park is going to gain value the next week.
Versus, exactly.
You know, like you said, I'm not going to buy another membership just to buy a membership and then also jump in and there's 10 parks that I'm not going to. Yeah.
Right. And we wanted to make it as readily available as we could. So that's kind of why we chose that. We do have all the tours on our website, but each one of those you can find on the customer's website as well. And the other thing kind of coming from my background is I didn't really necessarily need my brand to be front and center when we did this. And to help that sell, we brand everything for the park. So that way it looks like their tour, it's got their logos, you know, like some of the KOAs, we match all of their colors. So it mm-hmm. looks like, you know, you're within the KOA ecosystem when you do that. And the same with the other parks. So we really integrate the branding into, you know, to match what their branding is.
Have there been any hurdles with that of getting some campgrounds, you like, they don't even have a website. Like, you got a phone call with an answering machine and you might get a call next Tuesday. Have campgrounds been, I guess, up-to-date technology-wise to be able to get you adequate logos, graphics, and things that are actually going to add to a video versus mm-hmm. detract? Because a 360 video has got to be good quality to begin with.
Right.
You're not going to put a pixelated logo up there. Have you come into any conflicts with the campgrounds not having those type of resources?
So, to a point, what we found, though, is like the early adopters, they were the ones that kind of really already had all that stuff, right? They already had their website up and working. They might be working on it or improving it, but we really haven't had too many issues with it. Plus, it's relatively easy, and something I kind of taught myself is to take an image and then make it into a vector image and kind of try to increase the quality of it.
Sure.
It's amazing what you learn on YouTube, right? So that's a lot of what I did through starting this, because I'd never done any of it. I've never done photography. I've never understood any of that stuff. So when we drove in, I was learning all of those little things along the way, teaching myself, because we expect that to be an issue at some point, right?
Right.
We're kind of in a point right now where all of the parks have been pushed to through COVID to really increase what they're doing anyway with their online presence. So it hasn't really been that big of an issue. And we do have template stuff, like we have just generic colors that we'll use if a park really doesn't, you know, they're not too
branded. Yeah.
Yeah. Branded into how they want it specifically done. So there is some consistency within it.
And so what is the licensing model? You said all the videos are up on your website, but mm-hmm. then also on the customer. So are you guys owning the content and they're licensing it from you, or is it the other way around? How's that working?
So the way we say it is, we retain the right of the application. So when we build this, we build a desktop interface, a mobile interface. It's all responsive, but they're able to use any of those images however they want to. So the okay. bundled application is what we maintain, and we host those on our servers and link them to their sites.
So all the stuff on their website is embedded from
yes,
your service.
Okay. Correct. And one of the way when we started that, we had a lot of people asking for pictures that they can use on the reservation software on the website. So what we've done is we've actually integrated into the tours where they can go in and get still images that are not panoramic from any point in the tour. So they don't have to wait on us, and they have the right to use those any way they'd want to once they have the tour.
And is that something that they have licensed for a certain amount of time, or is it in perpetuity?
So we do an annual fee for them. Okay. So basically it covers our hosting on the back end and then any support they need.
So there's an upfront cost for them, and then
correct.
There's an ongoing maintenance
There's an ongoing
fee.
Annual fee okay. for that. So, and the reason is we host them on the back end, and if we do any redesigns to the interface like we did a couple months ago, we want to push that to everybody. And so by us hosting all of them, we still have the control to make sure everything's linked correctly. And we've had issues where, like, all of a sudden a link doesn't work, right? And I can go refresh that on the server real quick and it's back up and working. So it's really easy for us to support those when we host them.
Yeah.
But they all want pictures. We're taking the pictures through the park. We're doing all that stuff. So we wanted to give that content to them. And knowing they can't use a panoramic image really in any situation other than maybe you can throw it on Facebook and somebody can pan around it, right? So we wanted to be able to get them still images. And I didn't want me to be the roadblock for that. Mm-hmm. Like if they send me, hey, I want a picture of this, I wanted to make it so they can go click a button in the tour, remove all the branding and everything else, and just get a standard image of the site.
Is that just a plugin? I've not done too much with 360 degree footage. Is that something that was easy to implement to give them the opportunity to take a still, you know, 16 by 9 inch screenshot?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. It's basically you're just taking a screenshot of it. So we just put a button that hides everything. And then we add a button into there that just captures a, you know, a screenshot of your desktop. So it pulls that right out of there and then saves it to their downloads.
Nice. That's super slick. All right, cool. So walk me through what a job looks like from start to finish. You know, you get a hold of them, they say, yes, we're interested. What happens next?
So what we typically do is we typically build out months in advance, right? So we try to bundle projects together. That way we're not running all over the country and anybody else that's helping us out, we kind of have a linear path for
sure.
So we typically are booking 3 to 6 months out and then we're finalizing those dates as we get closer. But, you know, in essence, we get the park scheduled, we go there, we show up and we end up staying for between 5 and 7 days, depending on the park and time of season.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we may not be able to get the weekends, right? And that varies based on type of park we do as well.
Sure.
So the filming's done on site for, you know, we stay on site for 7 days. And then from there, it's usually a 2 to 5 week turnaround to get them the actual tour back once everything's linked, labeled, and put all together.
When you go in to film a campground, what are you trying to get? Are you literally just like driving around like a Google Street View truck and just videoing everything from the top of your vehicle? Are you getting off and walking? What all are you capturing? And is there a sequence in how you're doing it?
Yeah, I prefer walking. We have looked at doing other things. There's just more consistency when you walk.
Okay. Consistency in what way?
People driving down the road and, you know, running into people. People always want to ask questions. So it's easier to kind of capture everything and make sure you've captured it at a slower pace. Like we're at now, you know, we might be filming at noon and check-in's happening and I have to get off to the side of the road back and forth. And it's easier for me to get back in place on foot and continue going.
Got it.
And plus, it's better exercise. I can walk and, you know, you get time out by yourself and everything else. So, yeah. Plus, it's easy to, the biggest thing we look for when we're filming is to try to see, so you can see into the livable side of the site, right?
Okay.
So, we do have issues where somebody parks kind of, you know, right beside the RV and you can't really see in. So, we try to time filming when people leave or we may have to go back and recapture an area so you can actually see what the site you're going to get is.
Gotcha.
And the benefit with that is, too, if you were looking at the site next to you and you wanted to know hookups, well, you can see all the hookups from the site behind you, right?
Okay.
So, we don't have to get multiple images of the site. We do that naturally as we film and go through.
And then, is there a software that splices all that stuff together?
Yep.
I guess, is the tour or the video that they're getting, is it walkable, like as I'm clicking from spot to spot, or is it a video that you have to watch?
No, it's like Google Street View. So okay. You click and go at your own pace. And we wanted to do that because parks are always changing and improving and adding. So we wanted to make it really simple. So if they added a new section or changed sites, we can just go in and update images rather than having to rebuild anything.
Gotcha.
So it makes it really simple. We're doing a lot of those this summer, where they may have expanded and we just go through and we capture what's changed and then the new section. So we don't have to rebuild the back end. We don't have to start from scratch. We just layer that onto the existing tour.
Okay. So then you're not actually doing video. You're doing 360 stills that you can jump from place to place. Is the footage you're capturing video or
yes.
Is it time lapse? Okay.
No. So it's video. And the reason is we do a high frame rate video.
Yep.
And then we can extract what we need to out of there.
Okay.
So we've had it where like very treed campgrounds, if it's a really bright sunny day, you might get the sun peeking through and it kind of washes out part of the image.
Sure.
We can go back a couple frames and get a better image from that instead of just relying on we only had one picture, right? So it gives us more options. And we can also say if there are instances where you may not be able to see into the site well, we can capture the best angle possible for that site.
Sure.
So it takes a lot of the complexity out of the filming side too.
Mm-hmm.
When you say, you know, you just got to go walk down the middle of the road and then we'll do everything on the back end as long as we have the high frame rate video and we have the footage that we need and we can do with it what we need to.
What frame rate are you guys filming at? Is it 120 higher?
No, it's 60 to 30, just depending on which camera we're using and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So 30 frame rates is typically plenty that we need to do. We have looked at doing like 5 frames a second, and you just get too much jump, and you may not have the same options that you did if you do a 30 frame rate, you know, video.
Yeah, for sure. What are you using to capture this stuff? Like, are we just buying Insta360s and walking around with them?
Yeah, so we have more of the professional style of those. So the really thing we want to look at is we want high quality images, because we want to be able to allow the campgrounds to use those, right? You know, we didn't want to have some of the like GoPros and stuff like that where they're great cameras, but the resolution's a lot less because they're made for close-up action,
sure.
Right? So we're using a little bit, you know, higher level than that so we can pick up a better image, because when it is stationary and it is blurry, you can really see those things. But we do use Insta360s for that. And they're really convenient too with the leveling and everything else they do.
Yeah.
We do have a higher end professional camera that we use as well. It's got about 6 cameras around it. That one's a great camera, but you know, there's a trade-off when you get higher into the higher end cameras. They're really built for photography and not so much kind of how we're filming. So we do use those in both instances though.
Yeah. So I'm imagining, you know, like a World War I radio operator with a backpack on, this big old like radio whip.
That's exactly what it is.
You're just walking down with a big antenna above you, because you got to have it above your head, I would assume.
So I do have a backpack because the more professional one we have is a heavier camera.
Uh-huh.
The smaller one, I'll typically walk with like a selfie stick, okay. Right? And I hold it up. But we try to film at like 7.5 to 8 feet. That way you're over top of cars. So if somebody is parked there, you can still get an angle on a site, even if, you know, they're in the way.
Uh-huh.
But it gives a better visual, too, of the site when you're kind of looking a little bit down.
Yeah.
But that's the biggest question I get is, did you ever find Scotty? Right? Because I walk around with this big camera on my back and it's got antennas on it. And people are like, what are you doing around here? Right? Uh-huh. So that was a big hurdle to get over when we started the business, was looking like an idiot walking down the road.
Well, and you don't want to be interrupted, right? Because you're like, hey, here's my card. I'll come back and talk to you later. But you can't do that either.
Right. Now, I will say I've gotten a lot of good comments, right, from people who see me going. I tell them what we're doing, and they talk about how awesome that would have been to have this, right? So there's good snippets, not that we use the video of that, but right. It's good feedback that we can get, and I have it recorded. So it's like, I might not remember it, but as I go through the video, I remember that conversation and everything they had there. But again, walking, people always want to know, right?
Yeah.
And it's a good opportunity for us to get feedback from people. You know, as we're going through, they're like, what's going on? We tell them what we're doing. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's so awesome. You know, I wish everywhere had that, right? So one, it helps us to connect with the people that are there. And, you know, it's simpler and I get my exercise.
Yeah. So are there rigs set up that have a frame and a backpack? Or is it like, so when you've got the bigger camera, is there something set up specifically for that purpose? Or are you taking 360 cameras that were built for maybe movie industry and retrofitting them to be able to walk without big booms and stuff? How's it working?
So there's only about one that I found that really works, and it's a backpack that's got a monopole on the back of it that you just mount the camera to.
Okay.
That's the simplest one. The issue is there's always like a 6-week lead time on them. They're coming from overseas, and so getting your hands on them takes a while.
Yeah. Especially when you're traveling.
Exactly. So that's why a lot of the times we still use the selfie stick. It's easier than putting that whole rig on, to just screw the camera onto the stick and hold it above your head and go walk down a road. If I were doing a whole park and we only had a very limited amount of time to do it,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, your arm gets tired and stuff like that. So that's why I moved to, you know, the backpack. Now, there are some other rigs that you can do that are made for more like mountain biking with, you know, action cameras.
Okay.
And those things we're testing out to see how well they do.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's more of they're built for sitting on a bike, so they kind of stick behind you. And we need them to sit upright because we're walking through. So
gotcha.
There are some other things that we're looking at right now.
And you don't necessarily need to worry about level images because it's a 360 camera, right? Like
right.
You don't have to have a gimbal on top of this
correct.
Pole. Okay.
Well, and there's on the editing side of it, you know, back to the images, if there's always instances where it's unlevel, and we'll use a software that'll help us to level those.
Okay.
Because it does get, you know, pretty noticeable as you go through a tour if things are off level.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at it, it just feels that way, right? So we do use software to help level a lot of those.
Gotcha. No, that makes total sense. You can look anywhere you want, but the way it was captured is still going to present in the footage. Yeah.
Correct. And so that's where, as we're filming, there's a big piece before we leave anywhere. We go review the footage to make sure, you know, did we capture everything? And is it usable video? Because we've had instances where I didn't know the camera wasn't recording the right way. Right.
Yeah.
So like we've had
been there, done that.
Exactly. Like And with 360, it's hard to tell because if you're viewing it on your preview app, you know, you might only be looking one direction, but the backside might be completely washed out because the exposure on that individual lens went weird for a second when you started recording, right? Yeah. So those are little things that we have to make sure, you know, before we leave a park, that it's verified that we have the content and it's not messed up in any way.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously going to depend on the size of the park, but is there a general rule of like X number of sites equals X number of hours in filming?
So we've kind of broken that down in the last year. And when we started the company, that was really kind of where I wanted to get to, is like, I wanted to simplify this as much as possible, because if there were ever a situation where we were going to grow, I wanted this to be able to be easily adapted and understood by somebody. So in general, like I would say our average park size is probably about 200 to 250. And I will say at a slow pace, you'll probably walk for 4 hours.
Okay.
And then there's, you know, probably double that time on the back end, just looking at the footage, right? So just making sure it's there and then uploading it to our server so we can review the video as well. So it's, I would say your 8 hours on a site is pretty standard. And then like for us, I could do a park that way. I can film it in an hour and a half, right? Because I know how I'm going. And we do take very good notes on maps. So we know which video we took on what road, and we kind of index all of those things.
Okay.
So instead of relying on whatever this road's named, you know, we'll go through and individually number all the roads. So that way I know this is the first road, the second road, the third road. And when I put the video back into my computer, I just name the videos that same way. So I can always tell where I was at. So just that organization takes a little bit of time. But in general, it's typically less than 8 hours in a project when you're walking and do from the filming side of it.
Right.
Because in addition to getting the campsites, we do all the amenities. We'll do inside of any of their cabins. We do their camp stores. We looked at it as us. We've traveled with people who don't have RVs, who are used to doing hotel rooms, and their comfort level of like, well, it's a cabin, right?
Yeah.
So we do go inside of all those amenities as well. So there's a mix of video and photos. So if you're just doing a video project, then it's a lot shorter than if you're kind of coordinating to get in a few cabins and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then, I mean, obviously campgrounds are being used. You don't get that luxury of having a totally empty campground. How does that play into what you're capturing and or how it's edited?
So it really doesn't matter. Like we've talked to a lot of RVers, and seeing a rig in a site gives them an idea of what it's going to look like if they park there, right?
Sure.
And having an empty site, you get to see the whole site, right? So we haven't really gotten extremely, you know, heavy feedback one way or the other.
Okay.
Like I said before, what we really try to focus on is capturing the site, right? And not just a car parked in front of it. So really, that's the bigger focus that we do, is can you see down the part of the site that that camper is going to use?
Right.
And what's going to help sell that site, whether it's a bigger yard or whatever it is, that's really the content that we want to capture.
Mm-hmm.
So you and your family can only do so much.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like bringing more people on to grow this business?
So we're just starting that now. So over the last 2 years, we've kind of got the processes down and simplified enough to where it's very easy to understand the scope of what you're going to do when you walk into a park. So what we're looking for is, you know, people who are familiar with photography, maybe do some on the side and understand kind of angles and things like that. But mobility is kind of the bigger piece of it, because as we book out projects like New England this summer, we have projects on the way up to New England, and then kind of we're booking out projects on the way back. So we might have 5 weeks in a row where you're back-to-back projects and moving amongst those areas. So when we started this, the goal was, you know, we wanted to get on the road too. And we didn't want to be driving all over the country. So we try to regionalize all of that filming, and we try to make it into a linear path for somebody as they would be traveling.
Okay.
But there's always things that come up, right? So like we've had last summer, we had people that jumped on board 3 weeks before they wanted to film, right? And having the ability to move and go to those places, that helps a lot. But the other piece of it is we do get a week at each campground. So as part of the project, we go and stay at that park. We had no charge because we're out there filming that whole park. So, you know, you kind of get a week in an area plus, you know, the little bit of work that needs done on site. And then you might be moving to the next area and stuff like that. So as we're looking at it, it's, we want to make the filming, you know, as easy as possible. And if people are on the road and want to go somewhere, they could get projects and we could schedule projects and they could go out and film those. And then on the back end, they just turn over the footage to us, and then we'll do the editing and piecing together and everything else.
So are you guys doing the editing?
We are.
Yeah.
Yep. So with each of the tours. So we just started creating interactive maps too.
That's a lot of footage, man.
It is.
That is a lot of footage.
So when we do this, we also have to link all the images together, but then we also have to link them all to an interactive map. And that map now is living on the campground's website. So when you pull up their campground map, you just click on a site or amenity and you jump right into the tour at that point.
Okay.
So on the back end, that's why, you know, there might be 8 hours of filming, but there's a lot more on the back end when we're editing it and piecing everything together and, you know, making sure the images are of the right exposure and everything else, and then putting them all together, labeling sites, branding the content, and then making a map.
You know, I think you're poised at having had to do all this and also being at the crux of AI taking in for editing and stuff. Like,
yep.
Within the next 24 months, your editing is going to be super duper simple. And I'm excited for you because of that, but that just sounds overwhelming. Because, you know, you go to an RV show, and by the fourth RV, you're like, which one did we look at again? Yep. I'm sure campgrounds are the same way. Like, you know, did this one have the pool or did that one have the bocce ball court?
Right.
And especially when you're looking at like 7-8 hours of footage of someone walking 360 degrees, it's not even like you can only look where you're at. You got to make sure that you're looking around. Are you editing on a flat screen, or are you putting on like VR goggles and being able to look around? And
so I've gotten really good at looking at panoramic images flattened out.
Okay.
So that was a learned skill to understand where you're at, what's directly beside you. And so that was 2 years of looking at images before I could look at a panoramic image to tell you exactly what's going on right there.
Just like the Matrix, just looking at ones and zeros.
It is. It's so I've developed the skill to understand. I can tell where you're going and where you're coming from and when you're lined up to a site, right? So we do some of the editing in 360. So the platform, we can kind of view it in 360 and kind of know what we're looking at, right? So we get a good idea from it. But a lot of the editing, when we go pulling it in to do exposure editing and stuff like that, it's a flat image.
Wow.
So that also presents a challenge too, because not all areas of a 360 are going to be exposed the same way. So there's times where we have to edit portions of the photo and not the whole photo.
Okay.
Right? So one imager may be facing the sun and the other one's not. And so now you have two different exposures that you're trying to look at. And sometimes that takes a lot of editing to try to get the exposure set right. So there's some challenges in it. But again, after we've probably looked at thousands and thousands of campsites and pictures right now from just what we've done, I kind of understand what's going to happen before it goes. So like, yes, it's a lot of work, but at this point, I kind of have all those processes and understand how to manipulate it when I'm working with 360 pictures.
So 2 years in, you're getting all these processes nailed down to the point where you're now almost to the point of, like, for lack of a better word, being able to franchise out, being like, hey, here's the tactics, the schedule, like, this is how you do it. Go in, here's the equipment and get it done. What were some of the roadblocks and learning curves these past 2 years of getting to that point?
Just being mobile. Internet was the first big hurdle that we ran into, right? So it was all fine when we had a couple parks and I was saving them all to my hard drive and then uploading them at my house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we quickly realized is that the internet setup we had didn't always work well. And what the challenges that presented was, I might be somewhere and have to turn in a project. And now I got to go find somewhere I can go upload gigs and gigs worth of data.
How much is a project?
It varies.
Like 5 gigs, 150?
I would say 4 to 5 gigs is average.
Okay.
But when you look at that, that might be, if you're at a 5 gig project, you're looking at 500-600 panoramas that you're trying to upload.
Yeah.
And they're higher resolution. So it takes a lot. There were points where I would sit in the truck for 2 hours trying to upload stuff off of a hotspot.
Yeah.
And we just drain hotspots like crazy. So then we had to go through, what internet do we use? Starlink is great, but it's not great all the time. And disruptions in uploads can cause corruptions in files.
Yep.
So that was probably the biggest hurdle to get through there.
What have you settled on, at least for this point in time?
So we use T-Mobile Home Internet and Starlink.
Okay.
If I can say T-Mobile Home Internet.
Yeah.
So those are the two that we primarily rely on. I have a Verizon phone. My wife has an AT&T phone. So we have all the carriers covered.
Right.
So if we do get into a situation, we typically still have a way that we can, you know, upload stuff or do what we need to, regardless of where we're at.
Wow.
I guess the one thing that comes to mind is, you know, my brain immediately goes to wanting to be efficient and 100% coverage. How much has it happened where you've been in an area and kind of like, you know, RV techs or washers. If you're in a park and someone sees you with your RV getting worked on, you know, they're like, hey, can you come look at my rig? Have you been in locations where one park owner will call other park owners and be like, hey, you should come, you should have this guy come video your campground? And or how much deep diving do you do when you get a new client in an area to try and maximize the time in that space and try and like go to the campground across the street?
Mm-hmm. So that's a big push of what we do. So what we've found is that if we can establish a park in a state, usually, and it's kind of that broad, is that once we get a park there, we can now leverage that out in marketing for the following season that, hey, look what we did for this park. And what we've done through like a lot of the campground owner shows is that it's a close-knit industry.
Okay.
So once we're done, those park owners end up sharing and talking about it with other people. So the biggest thing that we've found is like once we get to an area is if we can establish a park, then we can expand that out quite a bit. Texas, for example, we ended up getting a park here, and then we spent 2 months just making phone calls to people that we met at shows and stuff like that. And we ended up making our trip out here. We had three projects lined up. One was still in construction.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't do that one, but we still have one out here. So now we'll have three parks in Texas. Plus, we just did another trade show this week. So now we have, you know, several parks in the area that help to expand the brand out once we're there. So once we get those turned over, those turn into a big marketing push to that area. And what we found is that when a park is interested, typically it's the next year they're signing up because they may be in the middle of peak season. They may have improvements they're doing this year
that they want captured.
That they want captured. And so typically it's like a year turn. Like we already have parks that we've
talked to. It's definitely
a
long play. It's not a 6 weeks and you're done. Yeah,
exactly. So, and that's part of the mobility too. Like right now we focused on like people who do full time and helping us out because there's a lot of flexibility in where you go and what you do and kind of how you move. And the goal is to get to a little bit more consistency. So if somebody's like wanting to get on the road or they have a summer to get on the road, like there's a possibility that they could pick up jobs to go to these areas. Right. And I think a big part of that too is like we're focusing on private parks right now. So you're going to various different type of parks. Like we have a couple of Jellystones where you get the adventure park, right? And you get all those things. We've done some that are just a basic campground. But, you know, most of the time you're in those private parks moving through those areas. And a lot of the ones that we have done have been in tourist areas, right? So when we went up to Maine, we were in a few places up there, Virginia, Florida. That's kind of the focus is where a lot of these early adopter parks are, is they're already progressive parks. They're ones that are trying to enhance their brand and continue to stay up, especially as, you know, investors have come into the market and buying up a lot of the mom and pop parks that need work done to them. Those people are really trying to recapture guests that, you know, they may have lost or, you know, from the previous ownership. So now they can actually go through and say, this is what we've done to the park.
Yeah, it definitely seems like the clientele would not be the budget parks, but more the parks who are like, this is what you're getting for what you're going to be paying to come stay here.
Correct. Yeah. And it's a justification for them for what we've done, what we charge, you know, why you want to come here. Why do you want to make this your
destination? Trying to give you the experience of having been here without ever having been here.
Well, how many times have you gone to a place and went and drove through neighboring parks, right?
Yeah.
How many have you, oh, look at that park. Let's go see what that looks like, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're trying to mimic. And we've actually had park owners that have implemented us so they can turn people away from that because they have issues where people will come in and they stay. And they play on all this stuff and they can't get them out of the park then. So like that has become issues where now somebody pulls up and they want to go through. They're like, no, here's a URL. You can go look at it. And this is the whole park. You can see it from there.
Yeah. So I think it's that no one can argue with the benefit of this. Have you found any ways to track those metrics or have the parks come back to you and say, you know, we were able to increase bookings by X amount this year because of implementing this? Having trouble coming up with direct ways that you'd be able to take from one park and present to another.
Mm-hmm.
But are there ways that you guys have been able to track that and get numbers and hard things to be able to use for marketing?
Yeah. So we track all the analytics on the back end. So we can actually tell how long people are looking at parks, how many images they go through when they're typically in a park. We can tell what sites they look at when they're in there. From the booking side, we can't capture that yet, though we're working on that this year. So the goal by the end of this year is to be able to better capture the conversion rates, right? So who goes through the tour and then who actually completes that booking through there. Right now, we lose that as they go to the reservation software.
Right.
But what we've recently found is that we have a park in New Hampshire that was really tracking his analytics on his website. And this was just in the last few weeks. I think we increased his time on site by 78%. So people were usually spending between 1 minute and a minute and a half on his website, but they're spending 3.5 to 4 minutes within the tour. So you have a cumulative total of almost 6 minutes of somebody spending on your website, right? And that is in itself, that's indicative of a purchase, right? You're not going to invest so much time if you're not actually interested in making a reservation. We also are able to see how many of his, I think it was 25% of all of his website visitors went into the tour. And he said, that's probably right along with my, you know, capture rate, right? That's probably about how many people are coming through and actually interested in purchasing, whether we have availability or not.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Do you know how that integration, if you could design it, how would that integration work to be able to capture the capture rate of being able to know, you know, like someone's looking at a site, button pops up, they click reserve now, and then you'd be able to track that they did or did not make and how many nights they ended up staying. Like that would be super helpful information. But I can also imagine that gets your hand more into the booking software than just the information.
Yeah. And so when we started the business, really putting our brand at the back a little bit, which may sound, you know, not right. But what we wanted to do is we want to partner with all those people, right? So our goal is to be able to integrate the booking into the tour. So you don't have to jump from the tour and the sites to the reservation. So we want to streamline that process.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at talking with a lot of the reservation softwares to integrate the technology into the tours. So that way it's a seamless experience.
And could that be something as, you know, a button with a link?
Yep.
Okay.
That's kind of the goal, is we want to be able to take the whole process of reserving, finding, seeing, and reserving a site and simplify that down to once you see the site you want and you know it's available, you don't have to go anywhere else. You just click a button and you can reserve your site there.
Yeah.
So that's the goal we're working towards right now. And that's going to help us to be able to better capture the conversion rates through the tour as well.
With this business model, I see a lot of runway in front of you. I see a lot of potential and I see a lot of success. How are you going to scale it and get yourself out of it, out of doing 8 hours of filming, out of doing all the editing for all these parts? Because, you know, as you bring on more people to film, to get more clients, to get like, as it grows, your time is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of this that is nitty gritty, taking up time. It's not necessarily like sitting there and looking at 360 degree panoramics is not.
It's not glamorous.
Right? And it's not glamorous, right? But it takes a lot of time. So what do your on-ramps look like for, I guess, getting some of your time back and or using it more efficiently as the head of a business versus someone doing the work?
So that's kind of the phase we're in right now. So we kind of piloted with a family that we came to know over last year. And really, they were the first people that we're kind of working with to figure this whole process out. As we've gone through that, they're starting their first projects in the next couple weeks. What we're doing is we're looking for more people that are similar like that, right? People that want to travel, people that want to get out, people that understand photography to the point where, you know, it's not something that we have to teach you how to take pictures, right? So those are the people that we're kind of looking to partner with and kind of regionalize right now. So we have somebody, you know, that we may be looking at to handle the Southeast and the Southwest and stuff like that. So we're trying to figure out right now, we're trying to find people to help us to grow that way, right? And the thing is, because we've slow grown the business intentionally, we didn't want to run out of the gate and try to take on everything.
Yeah.
We really only handle the east coast of the US right now. And, you know, that's slowly expanding. Texas is the furthest west we've been.
Okay.
So we don't want to grow too fast out west into places where then we can't support, right? So we kind of try to take it on a smaller regional basis. This summer, we had a big focus on just New England. We want to fill out projects for the summer in New England and get somebody out there to film. And then we were focused for our time on the Northern Midwest. So now that we're kind of looking to bring on people, we're starting to be able to expand that out. And the benefit is we're able to offer tours at various times of the year. So if we have people that are helping us in the South, and maybe they may summer down there, right? They may spend the summer around that area. For us, our time, we had to go north. So now we're looking at pushing all those projects till the fall or winter. When we start bringing more people on, we can cover more parts of the year in more parts of the country.
Yeah, my brain's racing.
Yep.
Of being able to work, you know, like, so my work with content creators, you know, I talk with them every day, seems like a really good partnering opportunity. Because again, you're getting a lot of those people who are, at least if they don't already have the photography knowledge, are interested in learning it and they've self-started. So I'm thinking of a scenario where, like, you and I were to partner up. I'm telling people, hey, I'm partnering with Campsite 360 to do some of these tours and this recording this footage. A way to both have a forward customer-facing brand and also business-to-business, right? Like, so someone sees us out recording, or they see a sticker somewhere that says Campsite 360. They go to that website, a way to capture that person and direct them to some of the projects that have already been done.
Mm-hmm.
And then also get it the other way from, like, I found this Jellystone campsite that I go to. I go to their website, and then I'm able to see the footage there. Again, ideas are a million. Like, you can have as many ideas as you want, but there's only 24 hours in the day. Is that in the plans of being able to either come in from the front end or come in from the back door?
Yeah, so we get a lot of traffic to our website already, right?
Okay.
So we get a lot of people there, and we have a map on there that shows where all of our parks are, and you just click on the site and you can pull the tour up right from there. And we get a lot of interest from there. And that's a lot of the marketing we do, is trying to drive people to the website, and then we layer on sales calls and everything else on that side of it. So I will say, though, most of our business and connections come from either state or national trade shows. The way the RV industry works, most states have a state show where their owners come in for educational sessions, and then that's sponsored by vendors who then put on a trade show. So that's kind of the sprint we've been in. When we leave Texas here, we're going to the Carolinas so I can fly to Florida to go do the Florida and Alabama state show. Then through the summer, there's a lull, but then in November, they pick up the National Association of RV Parks. They do a big national trade show and event. And then, like, KOA does their annual event for all their owners, and we are presenting at those, right? So we have a booth and we're there. So that's really how we start the connections. And what we found is the more people that we get that go to those places, the more people they talk to. And even the associations have smaller groups where people meet and share ideas. And so that's really kind of where we've seen a lot of growth on the front side of this. But we do have everything on our website. So if you're coming in there as a campground owner, it's more geared towards campground owners than RVers.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you're going to find a lot of the stuff on there is beneficial for RVers, a lot of the content we put out is more geared towards attracting RV, you know, managers and owners to the website to educate them on how this can help their business, what people are looking for, and, you know, why they need to make this step.
So if it gets big enough, you might almost have to have two landing pages, like one for RVers looking to find a campground, yep, and the other one for getting new business to record at.
And at that point, we've partnered with several different people. So we've, again, being kind of open to this, we've integrated our virtual tours into other people's apps already. So there's a couple products on the marketplace where, like, Camper's app is one and App My Community is another one, where they build apps specifically for campgrounds. And so we've integrated to those. So when they implement a tour, it's now integrated to their application, and people can see it right from there. We've also done that with, like, the state of Florida with their Camp Florida app, and we have a few more that are coming too.
Nice.
I'm an RVer, and I don't want to go search in one place for stuff. Where I search, I want to be able to find what I need. And that's kind of the approach we took, is, like, we wanted to partner with people so we're easy enough to find, and people can find the information on the sites they need to when they want it, regardless of where they're looking at.
How have you navigated deciding, you know, you mentioned that you're branding this all for the campgrounds. Is there any value in having, you know, your logo on it as well, so that people, like, they start seeing Campsite 360 around? Oh, well, I heard about that. I saw that. Mm-hmm. Like, getting those touch points, skirting that line between giving the campground something that is totally branded to them without your business attached, while also making the awareness of this program and this platform wider.
So we do have our logos on the tours.
Okay.
They're just not the prominent logos.
Got it.
Right. So when you go from
something like powered by Campsite 360.
When you go from one scene to the next, you see our logo. We have a logo in the corner that's there, but it's not the primary logo, right?
Understood.
So that's kind of the way we've gone about it, is we built the brand. We want to make sure, and that's a big draw for owners too. It's like, well, you're going to come do this at my park. What do I get from it? Right. And so now we wanted to deliver a product where they kind of have ownership of it, right? This is their tour. This is their park. This is what they've done. And a lot of owners will actually share that with other owners. They're like, hey, look, we just improved this. And they send them the tour and they go, well, actually, look what they did.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things as we went through this that we learned. Like, when you call a campground, the person you're asking questions to about sites probably hasn't seen those sites.
Right.
So a lot of the owners go,
it's the teenager that lives down the road,
right,
answering the phone. Yeah.
Yeah. So what they do is then those people in the office will pull the tour up, and they can actually go talk about specific sites and shade and those things and all of that. So that wasn't an intended you know, business case for us, but we learned that that's a big use case once we implement a tour.
Interesting.
Because we had park owners that said they'd jump on a golf cart and a FaceTime and go show people sites.
It's like, well, why? That's a waste of time.
That's
right?
That's a complete waste of time that you can do so much more efficiently. Like the cost of sending somebody out there to do that.
Right. It's not a waste of time because the customer is important, but it is a time suck.
It is. Yes. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So the offset of that at some parks is worth the cost alone, right? Yeah. In a year, you're recouping, you know, thousands of dollars of time where somebody's actually in the office helping a customer face to face.
Yeah.
Have you tried out filming a park and then offering the services?
We have, and it's not worth my time to do that.
Okay.
Because then I'm doing a whole bunch of work for a potential payoff.
Sure.
Where we did that really early on. And, and I will say it helped there, but like I have enough to do right now for people who are paying that, you know, if you want to see what your park would look like, I've got 20 other parks you can go look at of varying different types. One of them is going to fit similar to what yours is. So you can get the idea. And I think that's kind of been the biggest sales hurdle for us is it's such a visual product that once you see it, it makes perfect sense. But getting to that point with some of the owners and stuff to understand where the value is, it's really just a visual thing. If you see it and you understand it or you RV'd in any way, you get why this is valuable.
Right.
But that's, you know, some of the hurdles that we've learned over the years.
Yeah.
Do you see the future going towards contractors taking the footage, or is there a possibility that you get the processes down enough to the point where you send a box with cameras and batteries and stuff to a campground owner and they take it and then they send it back?
They don't have that kind of time.
Okay.
So when we would do this stuff, they're busy with the park, right? So it's something that we're looking at doing for like small changes. We've had customers that are like, hey, we updated two sites and we want those filmed, right? And in that case, it's going to take them 5 minutes to go do that, get us the content back. But 90% of the campgrounds out there don't have somebody that they can dedicate time to because they're dedicated to everywhere else, right?
Right.
So they're at the front desk or they're doing their maintenance or the yard care, whatever
it is. So in that relationship, they've got more money than time and they'd rather just pay
Correct.
You. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and we've talked to a lot of owners that are like, I was going to do this. I have the camera. I've had it for 2 years. It's still in the box because I
do
don't
have
time.
Do you want another camera?
Right. So we've talked to a lot. They're like, we wanted to do this years ago and I bought everything to do it and I still haven't done it.
Mm.
So at this point, I need you to come do it, right? Because they get it. They understand it. They just can't go do that for themselves. And there's no point to. They're running a campground. They're trying to bring people in. The photography and the things that you do, there's professionals that do it so you don't have to take on those additional responsibilities.
Right.
So it seems like you're getting to the point where you're starting to expand both in manpower and scope.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking for? What ways can the RV entrepreneur community help you?
So right now we're looking for help. You know, like we've talked to several people that full-time and we're looking for the ability to start expanding our coverage, right? And I think that's kind of the next, you know, challenge that we have coming up is how do we properly scale this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's always been a focus for us, right? So I want to make sure we're connected with people who understand the industry, who understand the struggles of camping and picking sites and stuff like that, and kind of know what they would look for in a park.
Right.
And we're looking for those people that want to make a little bit more money and kind of get some free stays while they're there, right? So you might be able to get to go to a nice park that you wouldn't normally go to, plus you'll get paid to be there. So those are really the people we're kind of looking for right now as we start to scale is we're looking for people to help us in the filming side as we bring on additional parks in various parts of the country.
Nice. And if someone has resonated with this, they think it's a cool idea and they want to get more information, get involved, where's the best place for them to go?
So our website, campsite360.com, is probably the best place. We're also on Instagram, TikTok, all the social media platforms on there. So if anybody has questions, they can message us on there or reach out to us on our website.
Awesome. I could keep talking about this for hours. We probably will after I stop record, but I want to be respectful of your time and everyone else listening. This is a really cool idea. And I think it's, man, I can't imagine what the RV community and the technology and booking and everything is going to look like in 10 years. It just blows my mind.
It does. There's a lot coming on, especially with, like you said, AI and just some of the technologies coming out with LiDAR and all these other things. There's so much that's coming that I'm excited about.
Awesome, TJ. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Well, there you guys have it. There's the interview with TJ from Campsite 360. I really enjoyed sitting down and talking with him and getting to hash out the details of his business. There's a lot of opportunity here. It's a really cool business model. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for other people to get involved as well. So hopefully if you guys are interested in getting involved and figuring out if, you know, maybe filming for Campsite 360 is something that you want to entertain, definitely check out all the links that we have for TJ and Campsite 360 in the show notes of the episode. And if you want to talk more about entrepreneurship and everything RVE related, head over to the Facebook group. The RVEntrepreneur.com/Facebook group is where you can find that. With that, I'll see you down the road.